And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome into the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton, a.k.a. SEC Mike, joined as always by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. Just ready for some, they got the pads on today, son. It's here. It's football time.
Yeah, and you know, we've obviously already touched on Hard Knocks on a previous episode, and I was pretty excited to watch this Alabama training camp series. And, you know, it definitely wasn't as hardcore as Hard Knocks. It was definitely a little bit watered down, a little PG-13 in my opinion, but I thought it was outstanding. I thought it was well done. What were your initial thoughts to watching the Alabama series?
I tell you what, man. I watched this show, and you talk about a recruiting tool. I mean, not that Alabama needed it, any more help, you know, but these kids are sitting at their house watching ESPN2, and they're seeing that could be me next year, especially if they're divided on schools. I think that this is huge for the University of Alabama. I don't know with this, do they plan on staying there, or is this something they're going to jump to a different school next year, kind of like Hard Knocks?
That, I don't think there's been any kind of plans for anything other than this one-time thing, but just judging by the first episode, I think it's going to be a hit. And like I touched on when we first spoke about this, the guy that's doing this is a guy named Bo Mattingly. He's in charge of it, and he's an Arkansas radio guy, and he's the one that did the Being Brett Bielema series that was outstanding. And I think they had plans to do more of those, but I don't think Bielema was interested. So they did one with the new Minnesota coach, PJ Fleck, last year. So it, just based on that, the fact that they've done several of those, I would think if this does well, I think they'll I don't know if they'll do more with Alabama or with. I think it would be kind of more interesting if they went to a different SEC school every year.
Oh, I think it'd be more interesting, but you know, if Alabama has any say so and they can keep this thing down there, I'm telling you what, they got something there, because the Hard Knocks is huge, and this version of college, you know, kind of it gets you pumped up, camp starting, and who knows, it may swing a recruit or two just so that they can be on TV next year.
Yeah, when Saban took the freshman out on the lake, man, I was just wondering, does Jeremy Pruitt got himself a boathouse and a wakeboarding boat yet, you know?
I don't know, man, but he better get one quick or something.
I thought the highlight of that entire episode, I thought, was when the cameras got inside the Alabama team meeting room, and you know, Saban kind of going on about basically everybody in the SEC's hiring people off his staff, trying to figure out the way they do things, and you know,
yeah.
His message was pretty simple. He did single out, you know, Tennessee, Georgia, Auburn. His message was pretty simple, that basically the formula's out there. Everyone knows how they're doing it. So it's not good enough to just do it. They have to do it better. And I think that's the right pitch for his team there.
For sure. And who's that? Scott, is that his name? The offense or the strength conditioning coach?
You're a Bentley right now. I'm just going to put spinners on that thing. I need you lower! Bam! Hit it! Oh, straighten your arm. Oh, that's mine. Yeah!
Scotty Cochran, man, that guy's awesome. He, when Kirby got hired at Georgia, the first guy he tried to bring was that guy. And when Pruitt came to Tennessee, the first guy he tried to hire, I don't know the first guy, but the first strength coach he tried to hire was that guy. Like, he's known as anyone that's not seen the 60 Minutes episode on him needs to go check it out. But he's a wild man.
He was intense. He had them boys going. And I tell you what, I was pumped up. I was this close to doing a push-up. Then I realized it was for the University of Alabama. So until he comes up here.
Yeah, I think that's a guy. He's been there the entire time with Saban. He's basically, I think he may be the only one on the staff that's still there when Saban was hired. So I think he's an Alabama lifer, but he's a large, you know, key to their success for sure. And I thought it was pretty cool that they give him plenty of airtime to kind of show what he's all about too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very motivating.
Now, one other thing I wanted to touch on with you, Shane, I don't know, I've never heard of anything like this, but this year Alabama is allowing their fan base to come to a buffet four times this season. They're going to hold it on Fridays before home games for $60 a plate. Alabama fans can come to a buffet and talk with, I don't know, I don't think it's certainly not going to be one-on-one, but I think Nick Saban's going to speak to fans of Alabama. Yeah, and this is going to be in front of the Arkansas State game, the Texas A&M game, the Missouri game, and the Mississippi State game. And they're calling this Nick at Noon.
Now, okay, can you give me the game rundown again?
Yeah, so these are strictly home games. So it's the first home game, Arkansas State. The second home game, Texas A&M. Later in October, Missouri. And then not the Iron Bowl, not the Citadel, but in November, Mississippi State. So the day before all those home games.
Well, this is interesting. I don't think it's necessary down there, but I don't know. I don't understand what's the gain from this. I'm sure there's going to be a line for this buffet though. I don't know. I don't see how that helps the university at all. So I think that's interesting.
So my next question to you, Shane, how much would you pay to eat lunch with Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, what we eating? cornbread, soup beans.
No, it's so. Do you have a dollar amount? Would you pay $60 to eat with Jeremy Pruitt?
Yeah, I think that would be good. Take the kids down there, see the coach. I don't see it. I mean, like I said, this is great for the fans, mm-hmm. opportunity to see the coaches. But yeah, I'd probably give $60. You know, I wouldn't mind that, especially if we're winning. You know, if he's just gonna get up there and talk about hindering expectations, then I ain't going to eat. But if we're making a run, yeah, I'll go.
All right, now let's go down to Baton Rouge with the man I know you'd pay $60 to eat with, Coach O. He had some interesting comments, but before he got into that, a lot of news actually with LSU, so we're going to try to run through these. But LSU had a linebacker who's been suspended by a guy named Tyler Taylor. Anyone that has two first names I don't trust, but but that's been proven here as well, because he's accused of breaking into a pawn shop in Georgia with a couple of buddies. He did this over the summer, allegedly, and stealing some handguns. So,
golly,
that tells me if he's guilty, he's never going to play for LSU.
Oh, now was he wasn't a starter, was he?
No, he was a backup. But you know, if you're on LSU's roster, you got a bright future, you know.
Yeah, Coach O don't need that right now either. You know, that's horrible news, and I don't get it. When you got a bright future, you know, you got your college paid for. I don't understand why these kids sometimes do this.
Yeah, he just needed a gun, man. I don't know.
Jeez.
So speaking of Coach O, he had some interesting comments on the ongoing quarterback competition, so we don't have a translator, but we're going to play his comments. Hopefully you can understand them.
So I thought our passing game improved a lot today. Talking to C, I thought that Miles Brennan had his best day yesterday. Those guys are continuing to compete. Those guys are sharing reps, and they all have their good moments. They all have their moments they have to improve. Nothing has changed there, and I don't see nothing changing in the next week or so. We have to continue the competition. Saturday is going to be preseason game one, and obviously that's going to be very important.
So, Shane, any takeaways from that? You know, everyone thinking the Ohio State transfer, Joe Burrow, is kind of a lock for this job. We even touched on the, you know, the prop bets. They took that one off the board because too many people were betting Joe Burrow. Do these comments from Coach O, do you have any thought on that?
I think this may be just motivating. Yeah, I really think Burrow's the starting quarterback. I think this is just to make sure that Burrow doesn't get comfortable, that he works harder, you know, shows up earlier and balls out, because, you know, who knows, a couple games in, he may make a change if things ain't working out. But I really think this is Burrow's job, and this may be more just to motivate him and the team.
Yeah, and I think you're right, because, you know, if a guy that just got there over the summer, not to say that Joe Burrow isn't the best for the job, but, you know, honestly, we don't know because we're not at practice, but I think it's incredibly tough for a guy to come in, you know, and then within a month or two, just kind of win everyone over immediately. I think it's a completely different story if had he gone through the spring and kind of won the team over then. You know,
yeah.
We've seen in the past teams name a quarterback after spring, but because he just got there, I think you got to make him earn it. And, you know, I don't think there's really a benefit to naming a starting quarterback unless it's completely obvious. And just based on the time frame that he's been there, it's probably not obvious at this point, regardless if he's the most talented, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Okay, one other Ed Orgeron clip we wanted to play here. They got a guy that SEC fans have probably not seen play. His name is Braden Fehoku. He's a flying Hawaiian defensive lineman. He was a five-star recruit, played for Texas Tech. He started every single game of his Texas Tech career. He was outstanding. He transferred to LSU, so he had to sit out last year. But this year, it looks like he's going to be one of their premier players. So here's what Coach O had to say about him recently following practice.
Right now, he's doing a really good job. He's quick. We're doing some things with him to use his talents. He's been a leader for us out there. He's had a tremendous camp, probably the best camp of the defensive line so far. He's in better shape than he was in the spring. There's some different things that we can do with him. There's some different things that we can do with Alexander. Tyler Shelvin's down to 350, doing a good job. Dominique Lippens has showed that he can play.
All right, so Shane, LSU line of scrimmage, that's going to be their strength this year. What are your thoughts on Coach O talking about the flying Hawaiian man there?
Well, I'll tell you, man, Coach O, I don't know if you listen to the whole thing, he is pumped up about his defense, period. And I think he was most excited about that defensive tackle. I mean, and if you look at him, dude's a beast. I mean, he is huge. He is fast. He's, you know, every team would love to have him. And that's kind of what you want, you know, one of those space eaters that just take up multiple blocks and frees up your linebacker. So, you know, he's been sitting on the sideline for a year now, just feeding him, so they're ready to play him.
Yeah, and of course, Coach O, you know, obviously his background, he's a big defensive line coach. That's what he's known for. So I think anytime he's propping up a defensive lineman, I think there's a little bit more legitimacy to those comments just because he knows what he's looking for. And he's worked with, you know, so many NFL linemen. So if Coach O says this guy's legit, I have to believe it.
Yeah, for sure.
And speaking of LSU, Tiger fans are not going to appreciate these comments, but Houston's defensive lineman Ed Oliver, who many people think is the top player in the nation, he's already announced he's going pro early, immediately after this season. I can't recall a guy, you know, heading into the summer of his junior season saying he's going pro, but there was an article today from, I think, Bleacher Report, and in it, Ed Oliver is quoted as saying he wished he would have went to LSU, so that's got to make LSU fans sick knowing they could have had that monster on the defensive line.
Yeah, for sure. I think he followed his brother. I think that's why he went there, right?
Yeah, that's what he said, so that makes sense, but at the end of the day, you know, you're playing for Houston. I think you're basically playing for pride because you're just – even if you go undefeated, there's no guarantee you're going to make the playoff. You're probably not. So I really wish you would have had a chance to see that guy in an LSU uniform.
Yeah, I mean, the guy could have played anywhere. And, you know, say what you want about these smaller schools. It's great. I mean, just the ability to make the team is great in itself. But when you come to, like, the SEC and the big time, I mean, he's missing out on a whole lot. You know, you saw it just today with this Alabama show. You know, these guys get everything. They get shoes, they get clothes. I don't know how much Houston's getting down there, but they get treated like royalty. And maybe that's one of the reasons why he wished he would have came over to LSU, so he could have been in this lot for seasons now, you know, not just here. I mean, they did rank him the top player in the I think, wasn't he the top one?
Yeah, on that ESPN's latest poll, and I've seen a lot of draft people say the same thing, so
I don't think it has anything to do with draft stock, but, you know, it's just now he's getting the recognition when he could have been getting it, you know, for several years at LSU.
Yeah, and you know, he thought he was going to play for Tom Herman, and then Herman left town, you know? That sucks.
Yeah.
All right, so staying on LSU, like I said, we got a lot to talk about with them. Brett McMurphy is reporting LSU and Florida State are going to announce a two-game series. And unfortunately, neither one is going to be played either team's home stadium, and they have two iconic stadiums.
That's awesome.
The first game is in 2022, and it'll be in New Orleans, which is pretty close to LSU. So And then the next one's in 2023 in Orlando, pretty close to Tallahassee. But at that point, I don't even know what the hell's why you're doing that if you're just going to play, you know, within driving distance of the home college.
Exactly. I mean, we talk about this. I just hate these neutral site games. And like you said, this would have been awesome. Could you imagine Florida State playing in Death Valley at night? I mean, they're missing the boat here. And it's not just for the fans that are there. It's also for the people that are watching at home. I mean, that whole experience, it's just taken out when you go to these neutral site games. So, but I am glad that they're playing. I think that would be great.
All right, let's jump to the last bit of LSU news here. This was kind of breaking just as we were jumping on this podcast, but the former five-star recruit, guy we've touched on before on this podcast, Christian Fulton, he has been denied his suspension. He had a two-year suspension from the NCAA, which is pretty unheard of, but he cheated a drug test for a PED test. He thought it was a drug test. He's never taken PEDs. He's tested repeatedly, and LSU thought he would be able to be eligible to play this year. And LSU is appealing it, but I, to my understanding, this would be their second appeal. So if they lost the first one, I don't know what are the odds, but, to me, it's an unfortunate for LSU and specifically for Fulton.
Yeah. He's been having a good camp. You know, Coach O came out and I don't know if it was more he's been doing great or if he's just trying to convince the public that he's in a, you know, that he's doing better.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what it came across. And it sucks that he's not going to get playing time. Yeah, granted, he did cheat, you know, let's don't overlook why he's suspended. But this is huge for defense, man. I mean, I thought with him and what's his name? Greedy? How you say his name?
Greedy Williams.
I think with them two lockdown cornerbacks, I mean, this defense was going to be tough. And now they're going to have to move some pieces around. I'm sure Coach O ain't happy about that.
No, definitely not.
Bet he punched a wall.
All right, let's jump to Knoxville. You know, Pruitt had his media availability, and, you know, my main takeaway from that was basically he's basically the anti-Butch Jones. He doesn't say no cliches, but at the same time, he doesn't really reveal too much information. There's no drama. He's just, you know, just all ball, but still very guarded. Obviously, comes from that Nick Saban coaching tree. But the most interesting thing to come out of that Tennessee's media discussion today didn't come from Pruitt, but I think it came from Darren Kirkland Jr. when he was asked, you know, about his decision to return from Tennessee after announcing he would leave. So let's play this clip from Darren Kirkland.
Well, the past is the past, and, you know, I'm really comfortable with this university. I love this university, you know, the best fans in the universe, and, you know, I've graduated from here, and, you know, I have fulfilled that obligation to get my degree, you know, so that decision process was a family one, you know, but I'm looking forward to moving forward with Coach Pruitt, this defense, this team, and I'm excited to be here.
All right, Shane, so this is guy, clearly, I think he's happy he made his decision to return to Tennessee. He's got 2 years left to play. What was your impression on his comments today?
You know, when Pruitt came up, he started recruiting immediately, and I think this was the hardest sale that he had to make. And I think Philip Fulmer even got involved with this one and talking with him and the family and convincing him to stay at the University of Tennessee. I think that was a huge get because the kid's an athlete, a star in the making, and I really think he'll be playing on Sundays one day. The fact they got him to stick, that's great, and it sounds like he's bought in as well. So big piece for us.
Yeah, my favorite thing, and this is not to poke fun at Vol Twitter, I mean, this is all fan bases, but I remember when he left, it was, well, he can't stay on the field. And then when he announced he's come back, it's like, hell yeah, like, hell yeah. Like,
yeah, everybody's delete messages, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think if you recall, Kirkland made his announcement that he was leaving Tennessee while Pruitt was on the road at one of those Big Orange Caravan events. So That said to me that there was kind of a disconnect between he and Pruitt. Like it sounded like he didn't even discuss it with him. And once kind of Pruitt found out about that, I think he would have let him leave. It's not like he barred him by any means, but I think he just said, hey, let's discuss this with your family. Go over all your options, and if it truly is in your best intention to leave, then by all means. But I think he talked him into staying. You know, coming into the new offense, new defense. He's probably going to be the one that's calling the defense on the field because he's so smart, and he's got a ton of talent. And from all indications, Pruitt was one of the things he mentioned was just you know, how high he is on Kirkland. So
yeah,
I think this is one of the guys that could benefit the most from this coaching change, and I think he's going to be glad he stayed by the time he leaves Tennessee.
Oh yeah.
All right, sticking with Tennessee, I just thought this comment was pretty interesting from Bobby Bowden, former Florida State head coach. He was asked recently. He was not asked this. He just kind of unsolicited brought this up. He was speaking with Chris Lowe of ESPN, and he made the comment that of all the new coaches coming up, I have a feeling Pruitt is going to do the best. And that's Bobby Bowden speaking. Nobody is expecting anything from Tennessee, and he's such a good coach. I think he's a hidden jewel, boy. I really do. So what's your thought from one of the best coaches in college football history saying that about Jeremy Pruitt?
That's huge, man. Because Bobby, that's one thing about Bobby. And if you look at his coaching tree, he knows coaches. He knows coaching talent. And for him to say something like that, that just makes Vol fans – that should make Vol fans extremely happy with what we have.
Yeah, and I looked up, Bobby Bowden's coaching tree after these comments. Not that it necessarily means anything, but I was just kind of curious. And, you know, he's got some good ones in his coaching tree, like Mark Richt. I believe Rich Rod has a connection to him. And, of course, Terry Bowden. And
yeah.
He's got another brother, Clemson coach and the Auburn coach, and quite a few in his tree. So not only does he obviously know talent on the field, but he knows talent coaching. So and of course he probably got an up close and personal view of Pruitt during his 1 year in Tallahassee. So I think his word goes a little bit further than most on this subject.
Yeah, sounds like he was a little upset they didn't get to keep him.
Yeah. All right, let's jump down to the Plains. One of the linemen for Auburn actually taken to the hospital today. Now, according to Gus Malzahn, it was just purely precautionary, and he didn't clarify what type of injury, and we're speaking of Calvin Ashley here, redshirt freshman, huge lineman. He was a five-star coming out of high school, was a redshirt freshman. He had some kind of neck or head injury, had to be taken to the hospital. Fortunately, he's already been discharged from the hospital, so that's great news, but you got to wonder what his availability is moving forward, because with Auburn replacing four starters on the offensive line, I think they were really looking for Ashley to step in and fill a role there.
Yeah, I think they said he was battling for the right tackle position, and they moved him inside to right guard. So anytime you potentially lose a starting offensive line, that worries everybody, you know. So I'm glad that he's okay. I think the results came back negative. So like you said, I don't know how soon he'll be back, but just glad this wasn't something more serious, you know. Yeah. And that's the thing, man. The pads are on. We're going to start getting more and more of these injuries coming through. So we just, you know, you just pray that your team's going to stay safe and healthy.
Yeah, and it'll be really interesting to me because, as we've touched on many times, that Auburn offensive line, I think that's the biggest question mark with that team. And if for whatever reason this affects his status moving forward, or he doesn't, you know, assume a starting role, that entire line's being juggled right now. So that'll be interesting. Now, sticking with Auburn, I thought this was particularly interesting. Sports Illustrated ran an article today quoting anonymous coaches, and there was not a whole lot of information in any of these, but one from Auburn was very interesting, and these are comments on Jarrett Stidham. We don't have audio, of course, because it's just an article, so I'm going to read these quotes. This is an anonymous coach talking about Jarrett Stidham. There's still a lot to be desired with Jarrett Stidham. Facing a rush, his eyes come down, he gets nervous because he doesn't want to get hit. If you're bringing pressure, or even if you act like you are, he's going to see it, and it's going to affect him. People caught on to that at the end of the year. In his Peach Bowl, UFC did a great job pressuring him. What are your first thoughts when you hear those?
Well, you know, they did struggle there at the end, you know, and maybe they did find something. And if these other coaches see that on the defensive side, then you know Auburn has seen it on the offensive side. So I'm hoping that they saw it, they've worked on it maybe in the off season, and, you know, make him a better quarterback. Because if that was his tail, then he definitely needed to correct that. So I don't know. How's he been doing in camp?
Yeah, well, before we get to that, I just want to, my thoughts on this comment. You know, I don't know how much I buy it because Stidham got hurt at the end of the year. So he may have been very limited in that, you know, if you're already hurt, I can understand you kind of shielding from contact. He had to have surgery on his non-throwing shoulder. He missed the spring basically because of it. And during the month of November, he was completing 73% of his passes. He had eight touchdowns and one interception, threw for over 200 yards in all four games in November. And of course they beat two number one teams. So I'm not sure I'm buying into it that people figured him out, because I think if anyone's going to figure out a quarterback's weakness, it's going to be Alabama, and they clearly didn't. So
you think this is just more of a product of his injury than anything?
I do, but of course, you know, maybe they're seeing something, and maybe they did crack the code, and that's what Georgia and UFC used against him. But I think it had more to do with his injury, and
I don't think they were really. I mean, I watched that game. They were not in the UCF game. You know, it just seemed like they just. Maybe they were disappointed or just didn't care, but I think it was more of that just, you know, than it was actual production, you know?
Yeah, I mean, how could you? Because you thought you were going to go potentially play for a national championship, and instead you're going to the damn Peach Bowl against UCF. Like,
exactly.
The only way that game is memorable is if they lose it, and they did. That's the only reason people remember it, you know?
Exactly.
But, yeah, your little tease there, middle linebacker Deshaun Davis, he had his media availability today, and he was asked about Jared Stidham, how he's looking in fall camp. We're going to play this quick clip on Davis's thoughts on how Stidham performed.
Did he look a little rusty, or did he look like he just picked up where he left off?
If you could see the scrimmage, you would think he's practiced every day since the spring. I mean, they made some big throws downfield. Particularly back shoulder. I mean, he was very accurate today. He looked good in the pocket. I think probably would have sacked him a couple times. But, you know, the coaches, they're letting them get some downfield throws. And when they were able to get the ball off, they were able to complete it. And so I tip my hat to those guys. They made plays on defense. We got to do better. But that back shoulder throw in college football or any league, any level of football is a hard throw to defend if his play is perfect, and Jarrett can throw it perfectly.
So Shane Davis thinks Stidham's looking good. What are your immediate thoughts on that?
Well, that's good, man. You know, he didn't do spring practice, and to come out, you know, throwing dimes, that's a good sign, you know, especially early in summer camp here. So hopefully here in 4 weeks he'll be back to normal.
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of says it all. Now, of course, you know, it seems like everyone's high on their team going into fall. You know, everyone's undefeated. I think you've probably got Tennessee at 10-2, 11-1 at this point. But so things quickly change when the bullets start flying for real. But according to everyone down at Auburn, there's no limitation with Stidham, so I wouldn't be worried about it.
No, and like you said, every year is your team's year, you know, mm-hmm. And honestly, I think if Auburn can get their pieces right, they actually could have potential for this year to be their year. So it's good for them to, you know, to have their quarterback coming out and playing good. So we got their first scrimmage coming up this weekend. And, you know, that's the first, I mean, this is the first time you really get to see what you're working with. So I think they're in good shape, and as long as he comes out playing strong, Auburn, who knows, Auburn may make a run in the West, son.
Damn, Shane, you really nailed that the first go-around. All right, let's jump down to Starkville. Well, there were some comments from Joe Moorhead I thought was pretty interesting. He was asked about Nick Fitzgerald, and this is kind of what we touched on last episode. You kind of mentioned, you know, when we were talking about the prop bets with Nick Fitzgerald, and you noted that he probably will throw a lot better. Maybe they'll use him a lot less in the red zone with his legs and more about his arm. And Joe Moorhead kind of echoed those thoughts. So I'll play this quick clip from Joe Moorhead on how Nick Fitzgerald is doing this fall and just in his new offense.
You told us at media days that you'd like to see Fitzgerald around 65% passing. Yep. a number only two QBs hit in the conference last year. Is that an example
really?
For you? Yeah. Is that an example for you of when you talk about championship standard and good to great,
yeah.
You set a high number on purpose?
No, that's actually – that number of 65 has kind of been, you know, the completion percentage that's been our benchmark, for lack of a better term, you know, going back to probably 2012 and a little bit before that because, you know, at UConn we were a little bit different offensively from a – programmatic standpoint, what Coach Edsel wanted us to do, but I think we hit it just about every year at Fordham. I think Trace was 57 the first year, 66 this year, so you know, you get up right around that number. You get above 60, you're doing a good job, but we like to set the bar a little bit higher.
Big part of reaching that number is going to be intermediate throws, and
yep.
Nick actually said that he wants to feel way more comfortable with those intermediate throws
yep.
than he did last year. How's he looked with those first few days of practice, and how comfortable are you with him hitting those?
Good. I think, you know, obviously Coach Brian and I have worked together for an extended period of time, and, you know, the quarterback is, you know, viewed as a coach on the field. So Nick's hearing it from, you know, two voices hearing it from me, and Andrew speaking the same language. And we're getting a lot of reps of 7-on-7, working a drop back game. And then we get into the team reps, a lot of runs, a lot of heavy play actions, and mixing in some drop backs. So he's getting work at, you know, short game, intermediate game, long game. But I think, you know, the drop back, you know, intermediate and longer range rhythm throws, you know, footwork, timing, you know, pre and post snap reads. We're seeing a lot of growth there. It's been reflective in his, because we chart it, it's been reflective in his completion percentage.
So Shane, Moorhead seems pretty high on Fitzgerald. What are your thoughts upon hearing those comments?
Same thing. You know, I think we're going to see a lot more passing from him. I think we're going to see, honestly, a lot more short passes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little more dink and dunk, you know, to get this complete – I mean, because that's what you want. You want to prevent interceptions. You don't want him running around all the time. You want that to be option B, you know. So I think they're going to focus on you know, getting the team vertical and, you know, keeping the pocket clean.
Yeah, and Moorhead kind of – you know, he said Trace there. For those that don't know, that's Trace McSorley, the former Penn State quarterback. And he did so many things with that guy. And what Nick Fitzgerald is, he's kind of a similar player, only bigger and more physical, better athlete. So if he was able to do so much with a smaller, you know, a poor man's Johnny Manziel type, it's going to be fascinating to see what he does with the big, fast Nick Fitzgerald this fall. I'm really excited. That's one of the things I'm most excited about heading into the season.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun offense to watch, man. And they're going to have a chance to shine week one, so – they're going to put up a lot of points. So if you got any fantasy players on that team, you better plug them in.
All right, let's jump down to Columbia, South Carolina. I thought Dan Warner, the quarterback coach, is someone we've kind of touched on before, and Brian McLennan, the offensive coordinator. You know, they're implementing an entirely new offense down in South Carolina, a more tempo offense. They're going to be very aggressive. That's something Jake Bentley has said, and that's kind of something that during his media availability on Thursday, Dan Warner was just kind of asked about the offense and how the transition's going this fall camp. So let's play this clip from Dan Warner talking about South Carolina's their offense and what he likes about coaching with Brian McLennan.
What percentage would you say, and we talked about this with BMAC earlier, but what percentage would you say was total rebuild or doing things that you had existing done better?
I don't know what the percentage is, but... 50-50 maybe, I don't know. But a lot of the stuff is things that I've done in my past, things that BMAC wanted to do but, you know, didn't last year. But there was a lot of stuff carryover from last year too, because there was a lot of good plays that we had in. And what we sort of did is went through and talked about what the players like, what we like from last year, keep that, and then what do we know that we need to add to it.
What has it been like working with BMAC, and what do you think makes him a good young coach?
It's been awesome. That was one of the things when I came here, you know, I wanted to make sure that I got with him, made sure we were a good fit, and it's been, like I said, it's been really good. The thing is with him, he's not only smart, but he's very demanding, and the players respect him. So you put all that together and you're a good football coach.
All right, Shane, so Dan Warner seems pretty high on McLennan, even though you and I are not quite sold. So what are your thoughts on what Dan Warner had to say there?
Well, I think he was a secret hire. I think he was one of your favorite hires of the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense with a new offensive coordinator that's really never done it. And so it sounds to me like, you know, if they got good chemistry and they can work through this, you know, because one thing about McClendon is he knows the players. He knows what they're really good at, what they're not that good at. And if they can, you know, really make those players shine, then this could be – I think this is going to be one of the more exciting offenses this year. You know, it's going to be more of a fast pace, you know, just – no high tempo kind of offense. So I'm looking forward to those two.
Yeah. And kind of like Jake Bentley has mentioned in a previous podcast, you know, when he sees the one-on-one, he is demanded that he takes it. And we saw that with the Ole Miss offenses. And that's basically how they got Alabama all those times, because their defenses couldn't really stop Alabama. And they're, of course, they're running. No one runs on Alabama. So I think they were just like, to hell with it. We'll just throw it every time. And I think if South Carolina takes that similar approach against Georgia, maybe they can beat them, you know? They've got the receivers to do it. And, you know, if we kind of see that Ole Miss-style offense here, South Carolina, even though you and I are both down on them, if this offense takes a huge step, they're gonna be a hell of a team this year.
Well, for sure. I mean, if anybody's going to give Georgia a run, it would be them. But, again, that's a big tall glass of water, you know, so we'll have to see. The nice thing is we're going to find out quick, you know, and, you know, implementing a new offense and all this stuff and facing a team like Georgia week two. Everything's going to have to work. The coaches are going to have to be on the same page. The players are going to have to be on the same page. It should be exciting this year.
All right, Shane, that's all I got. Did you want to do some mailbag questions?
Yeah, buddy. I've got a couple here. Interesting one. Let me pull it up.
Yeah, way to come prepared.
Yeah, sorry, man. All right, this one comes from Josh Barnhart, and he had actually a couple of them, and I liked them. Apparently, big Arkansas fan, and he was talking about back in 1998 when Clint Storner fumbled the ball. I don't know if you remember that game, national championship run at Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
They had the upset. I mean, the goalposts were about to come down. I think there was like a minute 40 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes back for a handoff, I'm guessing, and then all of a sudden hits the ground with the ball in his hand and fumbles it, and we recover it. And of course, we win and end up winning a national championship. But he's wanting to know the other end because he was emotional. I mean, here he had the upset, you know, locked up. And here, I'm telling you right, when I was watching that game, I thought it was over. Well, I mean, we beat Florida. You know, we had that close game against Syracuse. And here we are against Arkansas, and we're going to lose it, our chance to the national championship. And when that ball hit the ground, I couldn't even believe it. You know, I was just stunned that – did that just happen? I mean, that was almost to the point I think he had money on the game, you know?
And if I'm not mistaken, I think Arkansas was also undefeated in that game. So I think they probably had, in their mind, they were thinking they had a shot at the national championship. So not only was that a crushing way to lose the game, but my God, like your championship hopes go out the window on such a ridiculous play, you know?
So great. And so his questions, even though that was a highlight for me, was the opposite. Have you ever been at a sporting event that you cried at? So has there ever been a game that, you know, maybe that got to you emotionally?
Oh, yeah. Huge Brett Favre guy, and I love the Packers. When they lost the Super Bowl to the Denver Broncos, I was a little kid, but I cried myself to sleep. I didn't think the Packers could lose the Super Bowl. Obviously, they won the year before thanks to Reggie White. So that was a tough day, but I didn't cry. And you know, but I did go to Tennessee's trip up to Oregon a couple years ago back in 2013. And the score of that game was 59-14. And I think it's to this day, it's the worst loss in school history. And I think, you know, that's basically the only record that Tennessee's 2017 team didn't break. I've been on the other end of that, and you know, that was just such a great atmosphere and great people up there. They didn't rub it in my face too bad. But one hippie did come up to me after the game in downtown Eugene, and he said, you know, he challenged me. He said, if I believed in nonviolent sports like hacky sack, He said, I wouldn't have been disappointed. No shit. I didn't know what that means, but that's what he said.
Oh, man. I'll tell you, the one that got me was the year after 98 season. And we played Florida. I think we were like ranked number one or two, and they were ranked high. Of course, they had a great team too.
Mm-hmm.
But we went down there and we lost by a couple of points. And that whole week, what was so sad about that is, like, you realize you're not going to win another national championship. Of course, I thought we'd have one the next year, but here we are 20 years later.
Still waiting.
Still waiting. So I've been sad ever since September 18th, 2009. Or
1999.
Golly, 20 years. So, yeah, I was just in high school. But, yeah, I do remember being sad that week. And of course, that was the year Virginia Tech was doing good, and I'll never forget. I was watching something on the news, and they were talking to Michael Vick, and then they went to one of the defensive linemen that was like real good at the time down there, and he made a comment that to about Tennessee fans, like, you know, you had your shot, you just couldn't win your game, you know, talking about the floor. So it's just another stab, and yeah, that one was probably one of the toughest ones for me. But he did have one more question, and I want to close with this one.
All right.
He goes, is it okay to play Coach O press conferences on loop to my newborn so he gets that Cajun accent? I'm seriously considering this. I don't know, man. I love Coach O, but I don't think that's a good idea.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you look at it, because there's multiple ways here. I think he's setting up that kid for failure the rest of his life, but I think he'd be able to laugh at his son the rest of his life. So I think it just depends on what you value more.
Coach O is one in a million. And unless you think your son's one in a million, you do not want him to have that accent.
All right. Shane, thanks for joining me as always. Thanks for everyone out there listening. And, yeah, hell, if you want to shoot us more questions, we'd be happy to answer them. And if you made it this far, give us a 5-star hearts on iTunes. That really helps us out. And we'll catch you on the next one.
All right, man. Go Vols.